We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I would say all options are on the table for us still. Like I said, it always has to be the right guy, you know, in terms of personality, the leadership skills, what you're asking him to do in terms of is he going to fit what Chad and Brian believe in. So again, it's going to be a lot of time here in the spring still getting to know a lot of these kids. So to determine if that's who Brian and Chad, myself, all believe is the right guy to lead us in the future. So whether it's this year or next year, or maybe take one both this year and next year, you know. But I think at that position, you can never be satisfied until you have a guy that you really feel is going to get you a chance to win a championship.
So all those options are on the table this year, next year, maybe doing one each draft. Are those options you guys are all considering?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, if we've won in 8 games, then that means we've drafted well with a lot of good young players playing, and they're winning games. But also next year, we have, I think, 11 or 12 picks right now with stuff going on still that in terms for the future, then there's stuff we still can do a lot of stuff in 2020.
So that winning 8 games could fit into the master plan. Winning 8 games next year.
I don't know how many we're gonna win. Everyone keeps saying tanking and we're gonna go and be crap. I said I don't know what we'll be. So I mean, if these guys go out and we have some good young players and they play well and we win 8 games, they go, all right, we won 8 games and we got, you know, right now 11 or 12 picks right now for next year with the draft still approaching. Who knows if we get more? So I mean, it's having that. Those picks in 2020 give you a lot of maneuvering this year's draft and next year's draft and towards it as you keep building.
That was Chris Greer live from the owners' meetings yesterday. We're going to go to Cameron Wolf now, ESPN reporter for the Miami Dolphins on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Cameron, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, y'all. How's everybody doing?
Cam, we're doing good, man. Let me just go with this one. Get out of salary cap hell. Prepare for spending in 2020. Boy, you laid it out there with a lot of Mike Tannenbaum, and somebody gave you a lot of stuff, man. Talk a little bit about your article. I thought it was interesting, some of the stuff you talked about with the mistakes of restructuring to give bad contracts.
Yeah. I just wanted to be point blank with laying out the Dolphins' money situation. Like we've seen this offseason, they've sort of played in the little kid's pen as far as salary given out to players. You know, Fitzpatrick was probably their biggest deal, and they only gave him, you know, $5.5 million a year. So you kind of look at how they got here, and they were in a situation where they gave out these big contracts that resulted in a lot of dead money from Dominican Sue to Ryan Tannehill to Andre Branch. So some of these deals that we look at now and say they were bad deals for the team. And you have to get out of that situation. And that's something that Chris Greer has alluded to publicly. That's something that when you look at their books, it's clear that what was done in the Mike Tannenbaum era has set them up in a position where they aren't able to spend easily, and they have to get out of that before they can do anything in this rebuild. So as important as finding that franchise quarterback will be, figuring out how to use their money better and not getting in an area where they have $35 million in dead money, which is most in the NFL, is something that's going to be, you know, probably 1A and 1B with finding a franchise quarterback in this rebuild.
Robert Quinn, the Robert Quinn situation, I know that was in your article as well. Is that coming to a halt? Like, are they still looking for a trade partner? Because even if they cut him, it's still cap space, right? No matter what, if they trade him or cut him?
Yeah, Robert Quinn's contract is set up to the point where they paid the $1.1 million bonus, so he has another $11.8 million in his salary that's non-guaranteed. So if they cut him or trade him, that money would leave off the books, so that's another potentially $11 million in salary cap. But what they're trying to do is what they did with the Ryan Tannehill deal, is try to eat a little bit of money on that deal and get a better draft pick from him. And right now they're playing a negotiating war where they're trying to get as many teams as they can to bid against them and try to up that draft pick. So, you know, he visited Dallas last week. He's visiting New Orleans, two teams who both have interest in him. So really what the Dolphins are trying to do is they're trying to see, hey, can we get a fourth-round pick in 2020? Can we get a third-round pick in 2020 if we need, you know, $5 or $6 million of his salary in the form of a signing bonus? So I think you'll see that deal get done in some capacity. I don't believe Chris Greer when he says they're going to keep him on the roster. I think they're either going to trade him or they're going to release him, and I think they have enough interest to get a trade.
Cam, I want to ask you about the structure. I'm going to let it go today. I swear, you're the last guy I'm going to bring it up with. Just the structure from last year, Mike Tannenbaum, VP of Football Operations, the highest, most powerful title, general manager next, and then head football coach, where I know Adam Gase had some say-so and made a lot of bad choices with guys that he wanted to keep and everything. Where did Chris Greer fit in, though? He still had the GM title. Help me out. The other two guys are gone, as we know. How much of everything did Chris Greer have to do with it, or was he just going along with guys at both ends?
Well, look, I don't think Chris Greer deserves to be absolved for everything. You know, he was a part of that regime. No matter if he had final say in every situation or not, he was in those rooms, and he had a voice, and he could have spoke up if he didn't like anything. So I think that, you know, all three parties, you know, Gase, Tannenbaum, and Greer deserve, you know, some blame for how these last 4 years have gone, and obviously two of them are gone. But I think when you look at the situation and what their main responsibilities were, from my understanding, Chris Greer's, you know, main responsibility where he had the most say was the draft. So when you look at his track record, you say, okay, how did he draft? And that's a question mark. You know, he made some really good picks with Xavier Howard and Laramie Tunsil and a few others like in the air. We don't know what Mike Gesicki's going to be. We don't know.
Charles Harris, right.
You know, Charles Harris, Raekwon McMillan. So, you know, he's got a mixed bag in that regard. But when you look at the money part of the situation, and there was a bigger group, but largely that falls on Mike Tannenbaum. And then when you look at the coaching and the roster construction and getting rid of players who don't fit your scheme, that's largely Adam Gase. So when you look at those just in that peripheral, kind of see, okay, we blame this person for this, we blame that person for this, and now we're left with this.
So you signed two tight ends, you drafted two last year. That was a huge mistake, right? Obviously, someone's wrong here, something happened here, because why would you draft two guys last year in the second and fourth round and then pick up two tight ends this year in free agency? Maybe I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, I think that they were extremely disappointed probably from what they got from Mike Gesicki and Durham Smythe. I think that no player has a bigger jump to go from year one to year two than Mike Gesicki. I think it was a wake-up call for him. How physical the NFL was, and I don't think he was prepared for it. So I think that, you know, they look at tape. I'm sure Brian Flores looked at tape, and he said, hey, we've got to get guys who are more physical and better, you know, handling, you know, NFL pass rushers and NFL players. So that's why you bring in a Dwayne Allen or Clive Wofford. You know, they're going to give Gesicki another chance to be the guy that drafted him to be. And Greer, that's another Greer pick, so he wants him to succeed. But there's no question you look at that pick and you say, that doesn't go the way we wanted it to, at least in year one.
All right, Omar and I have been having a little back and forth on this quarterback situation.
Okay.
Cam, so I'm going to get your take. I'm very open-minded today, man. I'm in a good mood. So
you're in a great mood.
Yeah. No, I'm in a really good mood. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. I just, Cam, you know, we're talking about taking quarterback, which I don't have a problem taking quarterback every year till you get your one guy and your two guy. I really don't, and not sure if we have either right now. We got to wait and see down the road. But so if we draft a quarterback, you don't want to see a quarterback taking a first round back to back years like potentially Arizona's going to do. That was my argument with Omar, and Omar says if you got to do it, you got to do it. Because I'm going to tell you, if Chris Greer drafts one 13th or moves up a little bit and grabs one this year, and then goes, I don't know. Let's grab this guy next year. We're in a good situation. Let's take him. Then he got to go. If you got to take a first-round quarterback 2 years in a row, you got a problem. Well, what's your take?
I think that my whole thing is that we've sort of been in a groupthink society of the NFL that there's only one way to do things. And I think that when you go upon a position like quarterback, which is the most important position in all of sports, you have to get that position right no matter what. If you feel like, hey, I trust my evaluation to pick one guy and just ride with him for the end and I'll sink or swim with him, then go ahead. But if you really want to maximize your earnings, that's why I believe, yeah, you draft quarterback. I believe you draft a quarterback every year in some capacity, every year, and you continue to develop them, and you trade them like New England's doing if you need to, and that's how you build a franchise. As far as drafting a quarterback 2 years in a row in the first round, that's a bold move because essentially you're giving up on the first-year guy. And I think the only way you do that is if, like in Arizona's case, you see a year of Josh Rosen and you decide, hey, he's not the guy. And I don't have any problem with them saying, hey, we're going to draft Kyler Murray if we think he's going to be a better franchise quarterback than Josh Rosen. So if the Dolphins happen to find themselves in that situation, then I wouldn't have any problem with it. But that's essentially saying that the guy you drafted in 2019 has already shown that he's not the guy.
Yeah.
That'll get some GMs fired. You know, like Joe brings it up all the time in Arizona, how if you do give up on Rosen, you get a third-round pick for him if that's what the market is for him. But if the Dolphins move up, I mean, if at 13 they're sitting there and Haskins or you know, I don't think Kyler Murray's going to fall, but if Haskins somehow falls at 13, the Dolphins have to take him at 13, right? If he's sitting on the board and the Dolphins don't have to trade up, you got to take Haskins.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, Haskins is that quarterback that's the wild card. And the smokescreen of the draft process is really how far do you think he's going to fall. Some people think the Giants are a sweet spot for him. I know some people on our ESPN side have reported that that's not going to happen. So if he doesn't go to the Giants, how far does he fall? Does he fall to Jacksonville? Does Jacksonville pick a quarterback after signing Nick Foles? Does Denver pick Dwayne Haskins? They're reportedly in love with Drew Locke. So if he does start falling there, then maybe you ditch the 2020 plan and go ahead and get Haskins. But, you know, I think that they draft a quarterback this year regardless. I think that Chris Greer sort of laid the foundation that, hey, we're going to get a quarterback in some capacity. But if it's not Haskins at 13, I think they wait to the middle rounds and get a guy like maybe a Will Greer or Tyree Jackson or someone of that sort.
Cam, does everybody think for sure next year's quarterback class is clearly better? Is that kind of the thought from everybody in the NFL and the Dolphins?
Yeah, that's the scuttlebutt. But the thing that I'm you know, trying to be really cautious about is that we say that every year. Every year we say, oh, this is gonna, the next year is going to be the great quarterback crop. And last year we were talking about Justin Herbert, and then Justin Herbert decides to come back. You know, we don't know what these quarterbacks are going to do. Does somebody get hurt? Somebody fall off the map? Does Tua decide, hey, I'm going to come back for 2021 because he's a junior? So you have a lot of uncertainty with each of these crops. So talent-wise, yeah, you've got a Heisman Trophy winner, Tua. You've got Justin Herbert, who looks like, you know, a really strong pocket passer, a guy who can be, you know, an Andrew Luck-type mold. Same with Jake Fromm to a lesser extent. So, yeah, the talent is there. But there's so much uncertainty that it would take a lot of guts to bet, you know, your livelihood, your job on something that's still a year away.
You see the Dolphins trading out of that 13 pick if a quarterback isn't there? Trading down.
Certainly. Yeah. I definitely think they could do that, especially with Greer talking about collecting picks. If they decide that, hey, our quarterback's not here this year, then all eyes go to 2020. So you have to collect as many picks. I wouldn't be shocked if they traded for 2020 picks with a 2019 pick. You know, maybe trying to trade for a 2020 first-round pick if they move back. I think they would look at that, and then all eyes would, like you said, go to 2020 if they don't get that QB this year.
Cam, did we keep Ryan Tannehill too long?
I think so. I know Chris Greer said they didn't, but I think that, you know, 2017 was, you know, when Ryan Tannehill gets hurt and then Jay Cutler's there, I thought that was the year that you could go ahead and move on from him. I thought that they waited at least a year too long. And I know there's the fear of, hey, we don't want to be irrelevant and not have anyone. But the other situation is you're mediocre and now you have no answer. So I think the biggest mistake, like Chris Greer admitted, was not developing a quarterback behind him. But second, I think they waited a year, maybe 2 years, too long to get rid of him.
Cam, one of the arguments, as you know, and you and I have spoken about this, was pressure from the top on an owner that wanted to win right now. Did that play effect in all this, you think, going back to everybody, that the big three guys from last year in the front office?
I think absolutely. I think the issue with the NFL 2 months, and especially with the Dolphins over the last few years, is that everybody's, you know, trying to save their job. And it's a year-to-year business. And, you know, usually patience isn't really a virtue in this league. So everything's about win now. There's no long-term plan because nobody believes they're going to be there long enough to see it through.
Right.
So I think even Steve Ross has mentioned this offseason he's had to change his mindset that, hey, you know, winning eight games just so we could be in the race is not a plan. That's not a worthwhile plan to do in the NFL. So I think that this plan, although it's, you know, controversial because of the tank versus rebuild talk, I think it's probably the right way to go about it rather than just, hey, put a few Band-Aids on things and think we're going to be better next year.
Yeah, Band-Aids have not been good to us. No, you're right.
No. Right. All right, before we let you go, Cam, is there a short leash on Chris Greer? Is this going to be something where if he doesn't turn something around the next year or two, he's in trouble? Because I think Flores probably is safe for a couple of years, but because Greer has been here and been here through all that stuff, do you believe that there might be a short leash on him?
That's an interesting question because I usually think that the GMs and head coaches are tied together for the most part, but the fact that Chris Greer has been here gives him a different timeline, so to speak. But the way that they're planning this thing and the way that Chris Greer's going about it makes me believe that Stephen Ross gave each of them, you know, a sort of secure line that, hey, we're giving you at least 3 years, you know, to figure this thing out. Because there's no way as a GM you go about a plan to completely tear down and rebuild if you don't think you have at least 3 years. So, you know, maybe Brian Flores has only one rope. Maybe he gets four no matter what. But I think Chris Greer gets at least three based on just the way they're going about this rebuild, and they're letting him do it versus have, you know, a few other people in the room make a decision.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Cam.
Thanks, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.